Paul, would you lead us in the pledge?
Pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Just housekeeping again, please remember to turn your microphones on if you're going to be speaking and so that everyone can hear you that's calling in. Could I have approval of the minutes of the January 5th meeting?
Motion, Mullen.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Patty, good morning.
Good morning, everybody.
Morning.
I have two items for you, and they're both related to the same issue that is actually good news. The first one is the AIM contract, which is our consumer-directed home care program, and we need to increase that by $11,000 because we were able to exceed our expectations as far as home care for this period that ends March 31st. So we'll be able to serve more hours of service under that contract with the increase.
Motion, Mullen.
Any questions for Patty?
Hi, Patty. This is James. How many people are we serving?
I think probably, I'm taking a wild guess, probably about 96 right now.
Okay, thank you.
Yep. And I didn't state that the money is already in the ISIP line. We already have funds for home care, but it's always kind of an unknown how much we can spend just because of the workforce issues and our case management issues.
Any other questions? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried. Thanks.
Okay. And the second item is for Comfort Keepers. This is home care level one, which is housekeeping and chores. We need to increase that by $5,200 for the same reason. We were able to serve more than we thought we could from the beginning.
Second.
Any questions for Patty? All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Thank you.
Thank you, Patty.
Good morning.
Morning.
So I am here to make a recommendation for the request for proposal that was sent out to get bids for our non-secure detention. And so the RFP was issued on the 16th of November, came back, return date was December 29th. We received two proposals, one from Pathways Incorporated and one from Berkshire Farm Center and Services for Youth. We had a committee comprised of the county manager, the county attorney, director of probation, director of buildings and grounds, deputy director of community services, counsel to the commissioner, deputy commissioner of social services, and myself. And so we had a comprehensive tool that we used to score the two proposals. And we are recommending that the award go to Berkshire. So I've not done this before. I don't want to give you too much information, but I can review why we made that decision. Sometimes I tend to overthink things. So Berkshire, they have over 30 years of non-secure detention experience. They have over 50 years of child welfare residential services. They're located in Canaan, New York, which is near Albany, but that's where their corporate is, but they have services throughout New York State and surrounding us in Rochester, Syracuse, and Binghamton. And another piece of information is that the director, CEO of Berkshire now, used to be the executive director of Glovehouse back in the days when Glovehouse was successful. So he's familiar, very familiar with our area and the services. So their organizational structure was much stronger. But again, that's really based because they have that experience. And Pathways, while they submitted a strong proposal, they have no experience in non-secure detention facilities, so operating those. So Some of the organizational structure that was much stronger is that it provided comprehensive monitoring all the way up to the corporate level. So what they'll do is they will have on-site visual at corporate level as well as at the local level through the cameras that are in the house. They have a designated oversight administrator for non-secure detention services. His title is a vice president of detention and prevention services, and he's been with the agency since 2006. Included in this, in the organizational structure, is a family specialist, which will offer behavioral health services, which will be a big bonus. So they'll work with the kids and the families. They've got a rehab focus, along with a real focus on reducing critical incidents as a quality assurance measure. So they have very comprehensive performance indicators and outcomes. They have a designated quality assurance department for oversight, review, management of performance and quality improvement. They have a detailed program manual, which came with very specific intake procedures, very specific visitation policies, education, recreation. And they also identified four Title IV funding, which is new to us, which is an opportunity to bring in extra dollars to enhance the educational services at the facility. Their presentation was most cost effective with a staffing plan to cover the needs 24/7, including vacations and unanticipated sick leaves. They have a very specific training curriculum for staff and clients and the kids. And it includes de-escalation and supervision techniques. They have a strong cultural competence and diversity training and overall program operations. So everything was very detailed. The proposal is also in compliance with all New York State codes, rules, and regulations. And
join the meeting.
That brings us to the budget. So long and short of it is their budget was smaller. It was a lower rate than Pathways, not by much. They were very comparable proposals. For a 12-bed facility, their proposal was $1,475,441 and an 8-bed facility at $1,201,113. Pathways budget came in at a 12-bed facility at $1,512,000 and an 8-bed facility at $1,295,663. Again, they were very close in budgets, but again, Berkshire really kind of led the charge in what we're looking for. Berkshire proposes a startup by July 1st, although given that they have everything ready to go except for the staffing, it could start up sooner than that. Again, you know, we all have the workforce issues that we're dealing with, but if they can get folks on board, we'll see a startup sooner than that. The committee that reviewed the proposals was unanimous in their decision to award the contract to Berkshire. So any questions?
Scott?
So are we going to need a 12-bed or an 8-bed?
We'll start up with an 8-bed, but I would anticipate down the road we will go to the 12-bed. We're licensed for a 12-bed. We operated at an 8-bed, but because of the lack of facilities around the state, I anticipate that we will be full with no problem.
And not all of those will be children from Steuben County. So the other counties we do charge, so that would increase the revenue as well.
Mm-hmm. I assume we're still using the same facility that we own.
Yes.
Did Berkshire go to that facility and go through it?
No,
not yet.
Neither.
Is that going to be part of the process so they can be happy with the facility they're going to be running their operation out of?
Yes. And he has familiarity with it because he operated that facility years ago. So not too long ago.
And Buildings and Grounds, working with Kathy, has taken the opportunity while there is no children there to spruce it up, fix it up. They've done a great job.
Yep. It really is.
It's probably in the best shape it's been in decades.
Good.
Yep. And a new camera system. And yeah, so we're really ready to go.
And this quote from Berkshire in comparison to what Glovehouse was charging us is higher or lower?
It is higher.
By?
What was, so we budgeted 1.2 for this year. So it is about what, 300,000 more for a 12 bed.
Okay.
Yeah, the, regarding the behavioral counseling, is that going to be on site or by Zoom on site?
It will be on site. Some of the kids that are currently involved in Steuben County Mental Health for their primary health care for mental health needs or even substance abuse, Berkshire staff will transport them to continue those services until they are ultimately placed in a different facility. So they will provide the transportation for that. But having that family specialist on site is going to provide a whole nother layer of service that we haven't seen in a long time. They'll be there, you know, every day to help the kids.
Thank you. Do we, John, go ahead.
Yeah, the 1.2 million sitting out there for an 8-bed facility sitting out there, is that just personnel cost?
No, that's
is that all inclusive of what the building,
yes,
utilities, insurance, and everything else?
Yes, except for maintenance, which is we pay buildings and grounds.
Okay, thank you.
Any other questions?
Could you repeat how much it was for the 12 bed facility?
Sure. It's for the 12 bed, it's 1.5.
Even.
Okay. Well, it's 1,475,441.
Any other questions? Do we have a motion? Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't see it, Mike. Okay.
Motion.
Do we have a second?
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Thank you.
Thanks, Kathy.
We're rocking it, Mike. We have a lot of homeless. I'm sorry. So actually we have currently 165 homeless and we have 2 kids right now. But you know, it's a trend. We're seeing families come in with kids and it's a real problem. And the hotels are full. And there was, I'm sure many of you know, there was a fire in Chemung County, which housed many of their homeless. And so they're at capacity with their shelter. And it's just, it's a problem.
You okay as far as places to put them?
We're at full capacity. Yeah. We have, you know, one of the things that we looked at, which is just really interesting, and again, this goes with Code Blue, we had took a look at our homeless individuals for November and December last year and January of this year. And we had 256 adults and 23 children for the 3 months. And that's unduplicated. So that doesn't mean that's a total number that we house because they can carry over in a, from 1 month to the next, but that's unduplicated. And, you know, we looked at those clients that come in for emergency housing, you know, those ones that call at 5 o'clock at night to come in because they don't have any place to stay under Code Blue. And they know that we can't say no. So out of the, let's see, 256. So 86 out of the 200 and, well, let's just look at the adults, 256 adults, 86 of those adults never contacted the department for any services after that. So that tells you that that portion of the population really is just using the system, which is very frustrating.
What's it run us a month? For this, Now, they come in, do we furnish them food too? Or do we?
Yeah, they get a very small stipend for food. It's like $2 and something a day.
Just curious what the county's laying out.
So we spent, I can tell you exactly what we spent last year.
Kathy, this is Hilda. So a lot of them come to the food pantries for food.
They do. Yes, they use the food pantries, and that's, you know, a resource that is a huge benefit to this population. Oh my gosh, I have the total costs somewhere. I think it was 1. Thank you. 1.5 for 2021. 1.5 million. Our local share of that was 783,000.
783 that the county paid.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And the total cost was 1.5.
Correct.
I just, Kathy, I'm sorry to interrupt on this one, but I wanted to know, as far as with the eviction moratorium being lifted, there's a lot of conflicting information out there as far as what individuals that are in places are going to do, whether or not they can be evicted. And what I'm hearing from landlords, what I'm hearing from the magistrates, and then certain information that's coming in from some people that I know that are in their apartments that are not being evicted, is that if they go in and apply for the ERAP funds, the program was, it's out of money, but it was forced to be reopened. If they apply for that ERAP money, they're being told that they cannot be evicted. And they're being told that, and the judges are being told that too. I went to the magistrates meeting, whether it was last week or the week before, I don't remember which Thursday night it was, but coming from the county judges, they're saying if an eviction comes in and the tenant was told to apply for that assistance, they cannot be taken out of their apartment. I just wondered what your comments were on that, and how are we as an overall department and the county, how are we going to deal with this?
So my understanding of the ERAP program is just because a client applies for ERAP does not guarantee that they will not be evicted. They would still have to go through legal services of Western New York to get representation to process, to go through that eviction process. I just lost my train of thought. It is a tough situation. We are seeing clients being evicted and coming in for assistance. But that ERAP funding, there is a small portion of that ERAP funding at the state level that if you fall into a certain income level, there is some state dollars, is our understanding, that can assist in that eviction. But we don't administer that ERAP program, so we have no local authority or control or anything over that. So, you know, if clients are applying for that, they go onto the portal and apply for that themselves. It's nothing that we are a part of at this point. I mean, previously we did. We contracted with Catholic Charities to and ProAction to assist the clients in applying for that ERAP funds because it helped both the clients and the landlords. But at this point, we don't have any involvement in that.
So I can tell you that from personal experience, that if the landlord accepts the payment from this program, you can't evict anybody for, I think it's a year, it might even be 2 years. But
that's correct.
But there's nothing prior to that. So unless the landlord actually applies, then they cannot be evicted for a certain period of time.
But that's not what they're being told, and that's not what the guidance coming down from the state. I mean, I sat through an hour training that the magistrates got by one of the county court judges, and they're saying that the state is encouraging the court system to tell them to apply and that they cannot be evicted. So, I mean, it's frightening to me because there are so many landlords in Bath and there's so many things that we're trying to do to clean up the area. And yet there are going to be situations where you're not going to be able to get rid of a tenant that's either trouble or not paying or both.
So the eviction process, even if the landlord accepted that ERAP funding to pay the arrears, it does preclude them from getting an eviction at that point, only financial though. If there are other reasons that are, destruction of property or, we all know what it can be, they can be evicted under those circumstances.
Thank you, Kathy. I know it's a really difficult topic, and I know that your department is kind of stuck between a rock and a hard place on this situation, but it's very maddening to me that we are putting property owners in this position, and what's going to happen when they can't pay their taxes? I mean, it's a terrible policy that's coming down.
Yeah, it's going to create worse homeless problems when a lot of the people are evicted out of places they're in where they haven't paid people for over a year and become totally non-responsive on anything. It's going to be way harder for people to rent, and rent is going to be higher. It's just going to create more homeless problems.
I don't disagree.
So this notice that's coming down from the state, is that in writing or is that somebody just voicing their opinion?
What I have paperwork, I don't have it with me, but I have paperwork that the magistrates were given at their training that it's memos that are coming down.
I have the paperwork from the state. I can forward it to you all. It's not the easiest thing to read because it comes in pieces. They left portion of what was in place in September after January 15th, and then they changed a portion. So you have to go back and forth between the two papers, but I can get that to you all if everybody wants to take a look at it. Everything I've heard you talk about is correct. It's case by case specific. There's no general situation that you can or can't be evicted. So it's a little unclear and dicey, and nobody knows who has jurisdiction anymore because the county courts were like, it's not ours, and the village and town courts are like, it's not ours, and it's unclear.
Thank you.
Forward it to you after the meetings.
Yeah, Scott, I'm sorry.
Can I return to the non-secure detention topic?
Gladly.
I still have a couple more questions. How many youth have we had since we closed the facility, and where are they at?
We've been using Syracuse Auburn facility, and I think we have had two or three since our facility closed.
Okay.
And we've had several because they all start at my office. Most of them start at my office with juvenile delinquencies. How we've been managing it, instead of sending them out to the glove house, which before would be where they were held, is GPS systems. So they have GPS trackers on them.
Okay.
So that's the front end of things. And then the ones that cannot be controlled or past the point of probation are the ones that Kathy is placing in Syracuse.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Jen.
Any other questions for Kathy? Thank you.
Anything else? Thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, just reporting out for ratification and emergency purchase. Obviously, you folks last month had a discussion, vote about the enforcement and the $1 million grant. After that vote and then under the $1 million additional allocation that the state provided, we have confirmed with them, since your last meeting, that over the counter test kits and masks are appropriate and acceptable purchases. And just for reference, Darlene's here, but we've gone back and forth about last time we were talking about the hope of an in-person on-site testing operation. We've pretty quickly seen since that meeting that quadrant testing that we've all notified you of, that quadrant was paying for. We were just providing them with a civil defense building. We were getting single digits a day. So it just was not being used. And actually, as of this week, Quadrant is going to be done just because they can't justify the costs of staffing. What we and Laura Lee and Darlene's department also did a survey, and the residents indicated we had almost 1,000 responses, and they indicated that over-the-counter test kits were the thing that they that was needed the most. And we're seeing that, you know, the distribution, the smaller distributions that we've done through the libraries from what the state has given us have gone immediately. So with that, we under emergency purchase policy that we have purchased 45,000 test kits, two packs. And again, these things aren't cheap, but we worked with Andy for weeks. There was also an option of cooperating with a large purchase that Ontario County was making, but that was more money. And it's $10 a test, so $20 a kit. If we didn't get the, and why it was an emergency purchase, if we didn't get that in, what we were being told was available is one pack kits for $15 or $16 a piece. So actually we were getting larger bang for our buck to get it in. And so purchase through Visicom ICT for 45,000 two packs for $900,000. And then Mohawk Hospital equipment, 150,000 masks for $97,500. So that essentially takes that additional $1 million that we receive. That pretty much covers it. And we did confirm with the state about the process, and they said, obviously, they want efforts focused towards enforcement, but Darlene has that covered. We've only received a few. Darlene has been able to, you know, contact those organizations, I would say, because we've had not just businesses, but we've had very few. So we have that covered. We don't need additional cost there. So the purchase of over-the-counter test kits and masks are acceptable. So looking for ratification of that emergency purchase. And actually the test kits, James and I were talking, the test kits are arriving today based on what we're being told and a number of towns we've worked with to be able to distribute. So we have about a dozen towns that, in addition to the two cities and the libraries, that are going to help with distribution likely next week.
Jack, this is Hilda. Are we going to require that they are given to Sven County residents like they do in Chemung County?
So we've talked about that. And when we worked with the libraries, they were very hesitant to require like a form of an ID to be shown. So instead, and most of these folks know the people from their community, what we've done is limited to three kits per family that have come in.
So are we still actively enforcing this mask mandate that's been deemed unconstitutional?
Well, so there's been a stay put on that mask mandate.
Right.
So what or, are we, no, no, what there's are we been enforcing? There's been a stay put on that case. So the mask mandate is still in place legally. But again, back to the conversation last month, enforcement, we don't have boots on the ground, people going out there. It's if public health receives a complaint, which we have before, Darlene sends a letter or contacts them and say, hey, there's been a complaint submitted. Do you need masks to be able to distribute at your premise? Do you need signage? What can you need? So it's, and it's the same approach that other counties in this region. I'm only aware of two counties in pretty much the entirety of Western New York that are not doing that are not even doing that. This is the approach that everyone else is taking, is education, essentially.
What are the two counties?
Wayne and Livingston. Or I'm sorry, not Wayne, Seneca and Livingston.
Oh, John, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Jack, your last email indicated there was 300 and some positive cases. How is that number collected? Is that through Darlene's office?
Yeah. So now what happens is through eClairs, which we've talked about, the electronic reporting system for laboratory results of all kinds, not just COVID. Public health has access to those. So there's the laboratory confirmed cases, which we get a report of a couple times a day that confirm those people who went to get a diagnostic test at a facility. And then we have the self-reporting portal for positive home tests that individuals can report. So we're getting them both ways. It's normally what Darlene, 70-30 split or so, about 70% lab confirmed, 30% reported through the portal. Thanks.
What about like at schools? Schools are testing kids. So does the school report to you?
So we've had that process in place since last year when schools started testing. So Darlene has a clinical laboratory license that the schools are operating under. She's granted them the waiver to be able to test and use that license. So every day, every school day when they test, they send Matthew and her department a spreadsheet, and then Matthew uploads those into eClairs at the end of the day. So they are being reported into eClairs.
Okay. So the state has a system called eClairs.
Not the ones that you like. It's a different thing.
I was going to say, I need the login information for that.
Any other questions for Jack?
Could you remind me what the breakdown is for what the proposed purchase is?
Yeah, so it's Mohawk Hospital equipment for 150,000 masks, and these are KN95s, and those have been going very, very fast, 97,500. Visicom ICT for 45,000 two-pack test kits for $900,000, and those are the iHealth brand, which is what the state has given us, and I think that the community is pretty familiar with. It's not some different brand that's a complicated test.
What is that, like $20 a pack?
$20 a pack. Yeah. And that was the best price that frankly that we could find. And we were finding, and why it was an emergency purchase, in speaking with Andy and speaking with other counties, what if we didn't purchase this, what was becoming available were one pack kits for $15 or $16 a piece instead of a two pack for $20.
And this will comply with our plan that we submitted to the state?
Yes. Yes. And I have email confirmation from the Deputy Commissioner of Health at the state, because we didn't put this through until we knew that this would be covered by that additional grant funds, that test kits and masks do fit and will be reimbursed under the grant.
And when are we supposed to receive the grant funds, and what is the process like for that?
The process is the same this is the funds that we've been using for schools. It's the same grant. They didn't set up a new grant stream or contract or anything like that. They just added those funds to what we're doing in the schools. So it's a reimbursement base. So Darlene's office, submits the proof of the purchase order, the financial information, sends it to the state, and the state wires the money. I'm not sure how quick it is. I've heard that's actually been, it's been better than other state programs where we get reimbursed a year or two later. It's actually been coming in.
But it's guaranteed we'll get that.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I have the confirmation from an email writing from the Deputy Commissioner of Health for DOH.
John?
So it's my understanding that the feds have set up a website for people to request the mask and I think five test kits. Four or five. So I haven't heard of anybody receiving those. Have they made the distributions yet?
I don't know if they've made the distributions. I haven't heard. I've heard people who have placed it. I haven't heard anyone who's received it yet.
Yeah, I placed the online order the first day it came out, but they said it was like 7 weeks lead time.
Yeah. And that's why that's
good luck in between.
This happened at the same time. And we wanted to get ahead of the curve, because once the federal government was purchasing that many test kits, the iHealth are very good. And the community has been receptive, and they're easy to use, which to me is the most important thing. They're not very, very complicated. We didn't want to wait, because it would be 6-7 weeks. And then at that point, you're almost stocking for the future, instead of responding to the current pandemic, current issue.
Any other questions? Okay, we need a motion to approve the emergency purchase of these kits and masks.
Yep, ratifying it. Yep.
Second.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.
Thank you. That's all I have for this month.
I just have one other thing I wanted to mention regarding the student intern simulated session. There were only three legislators that stayed for that program, plus the chairman. And it was an exceptionally professionally presented session. And I would like you to rethink next year when that session is presented, that if you would stay, I think it would look much better for the legislature. Okay. And we need a motion to adjourn.
Motion.
All in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? Carried.